love hearing your voices when we do that little song. Thank you. I have just a quick question for you, okay? And then you can listen to the rest of the sermon and jump in if you want to. How's that? Is that good? Except don't sound smarter than me when you jump in, okay? Got it? All right.
What is the most important thing about church? Yes.
Being with friends and family and being with God.
Being with friends and family and with God. Did I just not tell you not to sound smarter than me? Does anybody have anything they want to add to that?
I love you.
Go downstairs. We're done here. Anybody else?
Learning about God.
Learning about God. Okay. Anybody? Anything else? Okay. I'm going to get out of this while I still can. The reading that we just had from Luke, what is different about that than the reading from Matthew? What is it called? The Beatitudes. Thank God. You sound smarter than all of us. What is different from this one than from Matthew? Go ahead. A little more negative. It sounds so beautiful. Woe to you. Right, right. That's right, but it's not what I'm going for. But you're right, but no. Anybody else? Yes. Before. Yes, poor in spirit versus you poor. That's really critical, but for a different sermon. Anybody else? Two seminary students in here, and they're not going to tell me what the difference is. I'm going to read the first line. Ready? He came down to be with them and stood on a level place. Yes, thank you. Sidebar, Brian just got accepted as a brand new member in discernment with Mr. Grande. So he better get that answer right. In Matthew, the Beatitudes are called the Sermon on the Mount, right? Jesus is up here preaching to everybody down here. And it's really, it's not a hierarchical piece. It's just that it's related to Moses also having preached from the mountaintop. I like this one because this line, he came down with them and stood on a level place. He came down with them. And I think this is really critical, especially in light of the conversation that I want to have with you today. The Beatitudes do speak of poor in spirit, or the poor. And in Matthew, they are very much, and Luke too, a mandate on how we are supposed to behave in the world and treat one another, correct? You'd all agree with that, yes? I'm going to tweak them just a little bit because of the conversation on mental health that I want to have with you today. Deborah, this comes off a little bit of your plea from 2 weeks ago, having done a service for a boy who died by suicide. But it is also a larger conversation that I think we need to be more intentional about. Now, let me be very clear. Mental health is a justice issue. Dana just read some snippets about how it's hard to get help for it because of funding or socioeconomic class or race or where you live or because we're afraid to, right? And so I could really bombard you with a whole lot of very depressing statistics. And I'll save that for another day. Because from a justice perspective, we should know that. But before we know it from a justice, we should really know it from a personal level, don't you think? I'm just going to read how I tweak this just a bit. They had come to hear him and were to be healed of their diseases. And those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured. And all in the crowd were trying to touch him, for power came out from him, and he healed all of them. And he looked up at his disciples, and he said, "Blessed are you who are poor in spirit and in support and in acceptance by those whom do not understand you. For yours is the kingdom and all the love and belonging you can imagine. Blessed are you who are hungry, longing to be free from the isolation of those who judge, for you will be filled with the acceptance and the embrace of our beloved. Blessed are you who weep now, who are anxious, or who do not always know what brings you to tears or despair or anger, for you will laugh, and your heart shall be made light and free of worry. Blessed are you when people hate you, and when they exclude you, revile you, tell you that you are not worthy, even when Jesus and God have chosen the side of those who are ignored. Rejoice on that day and leap for joy, for surely your reward is great in the beautiful world which our beloved imagines. But woe to you who are rich and pretend to be free of impediment and ignore the needs of those who suffer, for you have received your consolation. Woe to you who are full now, ignoring those who hunger in every manner, for you will be hungry, missing the kindness of another soul. Woe to you who are laughing now, especially at those whom you deem broken and unworthy, for you will mourn and weep because you lacked compassion." The Beatitudes, whether they are this version or the version that we read, can be problematic when they are interpreted from the perspective that sooner or later you will get what you deserve, be it all the joy that you've been seeking in this life or all the hell that we wish on you in the next. Right? But really, they're not about that either. Either interpretation. It's not about a next life. It's about how you behave in this life. It's about being able to gather in a community of friends and family and God. Right? I'm going to ask you a very difficult question. I don't want you to answer it yet. I'm just going to put it out there. How many of you have either suffered from, been diagnosed with, or have immediate family who have been affected by mental illness? Now, here's the tricky piece for me as a pastor, right? Because we're supposed to have good boundaries. I have really good boundaries, don't laugh. But I am going to self-disclose, because for me to expect you to feel safe and comfortable and understood, I want to share something with you. My worst year of my life was eighth grade into ninth grade. I don't think that's unusual. I think that's probably a pretty horrible year for a lot of folks. But in my eighth grade year, my father lost his job, and from September to June was on the couch in the living room. Okay? And this was 19 when medication for depression was not that great. Okay? And so sometimes it helped and sometimes it didn't, but he did not move off that couch for that whole period of time. Moving into ninth grade, that wonderful puberty time is when I started feeling like this. Now, here's intersectionality, right? Where we talk about mental health and the kind of unconscious notion that maybe I thought maybe I was queer because I felt crazy in crush with somebody in my school. And I didn't know why or what it was. But I was also suffering from symptomatology with major depression and didn't know that either. So this was the year. Fortunately, I had a mentor in my high school, the principal of the school, who took me under her wing, held me up by the lapels, and said, I know you can do better. And that was enough to kind of push me through. But over the years from that point on, I would find myself not being able to get out of bed for a couple of days. I would find myself from that year on feeling irritable, where we would call, some of you will get this, PMS times 1,000. All of you will get it, because if you're not a woman, you know one. I would find myself unable to be happy, like just shy of really feeling joy, right? Just on that side of not getting there. And it was really intense, but it would come and it would go and it would leave in just enough time for me to say, oh, I'm good. Now, I was a therapist. Yep. And so was the extra added burden of I should be able to deal with whatever this is. Okay? Never wanted suicide, but wouldn't have minded leaving the planet for just a couple days, just for a rest, just to get away. I was tired of trying to work through and trying to prove to everybody that I was all right. It was exhausting. My son was born in 1994. And almost a year to the date he was born was probably one of the best years of my life. And what I mean by that is I had a really good job at Johns Hopkins as a therapist. Don't be impressed. You should, the opposite of that right now. I had a pretty decent relationship, making decent money, a house, a child, pets. Things were actually really good, working out 6 days a week, doing triathlons, everything for self-care. Everything was great. And I felt horrible. And the night I found myself tucked under our piano, crying inconsolably, was the night I realized something was terribly wrong. Terribly wrong. Working at a hospital gives you access to psychiatrists. I didn't have far to go. And so that's what I did. I met with a colleague and I said, hey, I need a referral because here's what's going on. Everything in my life is as perfect as it can be and I'm miserable. This was the extent of the evaluation. She goes, oh, you're depressed. And you need some meds. And so at that point, I went to see a psychiatrist, bless you, had an evaluation, got on an antidepressant, which took me to what my normal would be, my normal. You know that place where you're not operating down here, just trying desperately to get to your plateau, and so your highs are no higher than this, and your lows are twice as low? I just wanted to get to my normal, whatever my normal was, and wouldn't you know? Zoloft. And it got me to my normal, which means now I could experience life in a way that was brighter. It's not a happy pill. What it does is it allows you to level out so that your ups are actually ups and your downs are not devastating, and they don't take you as long to get back. And it makes you functional. Where it made me functional and it helped. And I've been on it ever since. And it's been really helpful. And aren't you glad I am? My father had major depressive episodes and probably an anxiety disorder too because he had ulcers. My mother, I'm sure, is an undiagnosed personality disorder, but that's a sermon for another time. My grandfather was an alcoholic. My cousins on the other side, Irish Catholics, there is nothing that Irish whiskey doesn't fix for them. So that means they're undiagnosed. That's all that means. This is not a stigma. This is a presentation of an illness that requires compassion, requires help, requires maybe medication, long or short term. For some, it may be enduring, and for others, it may be situational. But the most important thing that it does not require is shame. Ever. Ever. Nowhere in this should there be shame. I look at my children now, and their story is theirs to tell, not mine, but I will tell you that they are on that genetic road. And because I could treat before they were adults, it's not a big deal for them. Not that there isn't pain and suffering, but they're okay for saying, yeah, I could use some help. I could talk to a therapist. I could take a break. There are things I need to do, things I need to try, things I need to learn to take care of myself, because they're not ashamed. Now, I ask you again, this is tough. How many of you, I'm going to ask you to stand if you are so inclined, have been diagnosed with, suffered with, or have immediate family who have been diagnosed with a mental illness, or not diagnosed? Please stand. Look around. A majority, thank you for your courage, a majority of people in this room, a majority, I want to say 80%+, have been here or have someone who they love been affected. You are not alone. None of us are alone. We have to come down off the mountain and stand on level plain with one another, knowing that this is something that affects all of us, but it is so silent because we can't see it, right? It's all in our head. And therefore, shouldn't we be able to just get over it and move on? No. Not any more than any other illness could affect any of us. And before we can be open and affirming in the complete understanding of what that means, we have to be affirming to ourselves and our family and our friends in ways that say, you know what? I don't care if that's what you're going through. Let me go through it with you. Let me walk with you. Talk to me about it. Don't be ashamed. How can I help? Just like somebody who came in on crutches, or somebody who was having trouble seeing or hearing or anything else that was acting as an impediment in that moment, we would feel compassion and understanding and welcoming, saying, you are welcome here. But first, you have to look at yourselves and you need to say, there's nothing wrong with me. I heard the best line ever on a show that my wife and I were watching one episode of. I don't even remember the name of it. And there's this woman who's sitting with her therapist. And in the conversation, it's British. And I say that because the word for crazy is mad. So when I say mad, you'll understand what I mean. And she's sitting there with her therapist, and either she has had an attempt or has felt like she wanted to end her life. It's not clear in that moment. But he's trying to assess whether or not she can go home or whether she needs to be impatient. And they go back and forth for a little while, and finally it's clear that she's okay, she's on her meds, she's stable, she can go. And her mother comes in and says, "Oh, I'm sorry I'm late, how did it go?" She goes, it went really great. And her mother said, "Well, are you mad?" At which the young woman responded, "I've come to realize that only those who are truly mad are the ones who think they have everything under control." Is that the best line ever? That is the best line ever. It is not the acceptance or the understanding or the awareness of who we are or what makes us suffer. Right? There's nothing there. All that's there is us. And it doesn't make us, to use really crass word, crazy or insane. It just makes us human. And we're up against a lot. You watch people like Dr. Oz and the other one, Phil. Sorry, Phil.
No relation.
Who are voyeuristic and go with pity porn, which is what it's caused, and show these people and call them names and hurt them all for the sake of entertainment, and it doesn't help those of us who watch and think, wow, if I went and sought help, this is how I would be seen. I'm here to tell you that you are seen first and foremost as beloved, cherished, cared for, first and foremost, and from that place everything else comes. So, wherever you are on this spectrum of mental illness, either for yourself or for others, know that you are welcome here and that you are nothing more than perfectly human. Let the people say, amen.